I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know, what do they call it? The Dharma, the Sanatana Dharma, the eternal Dharma, the eternal way. Within that, when you forget all the worldly stuff, you know, the sun starts rising. You experience the, like, reality of our shared humanity, which is so much older than Republicans or Democrats or liberals or conservatives. It's so much older than any of that. And that's what we really are, right? That must be what we really are.
Welcome to Be Here Now Network, Mr. Duncan Trussell.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Raghu.
So everybody out there, we're celebrating our sixth anniversary, and we have to start this little celebration, which is going to include Duncan and others who helped make this beautiful network happen, and then looking to the future of the kinds of things we're going to be going forward with people like Spring Washam and Nat Kelly. She's doing an indigenous podcast, which will be really cool. And Spring is a fantastic, by the way, meditation, a mindfulness teacher from Jack's camp out west.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, who is also into shamanistic studies and ceremony with ayahuasca. Oh, so yeah, pretty interesting. Okay, so everybody, some of this is, well, there's so many people who have joined after the fact over the years. But this would not happen, and Duncan hates it. No, he doesn't hate it. He doesn't give a shit. But he's the guru of Be Here Now Network, and particularly me, because, okay, we got to tell a little story. What happened? You were talking to Ram Dass. You had a, not Zoom, Skype with Ram Dass. Let's start there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was just, I didn't know you. I didn't.
No.
So I just couldn't, I was on the website and I saw you could do something called a heart to heart with Ram Dass.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't believe, I just thought it wouldn't work. I was incredibly skeptical when I applied to talk to him because it seemed too easy. Like, you know what I mean? There's no one asked me for anything.
Oh, yeah.
Put your credit card in or something like that. It was just, you just schedule it. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, so I thought, so obviously, like, maybe, like, some old part of the website they forgot to take down. But, yeah, then all of a sudden, I get this phone call because they call you first, and it's like, and then I'm on, Ram Dass is on the screen. Hi! it's the best.
Oh, my. Wow, what a moment, huh? But something happened of course, that's a very profound moment that we've talked about it in different podcasts, and Duncan's talked about it on his show. And but something in you after that, not long after that Skype with Ram Dass, hey, maybe I should write to the info at ramdass.org because why aren't they doing podcast? What happened?
It was depressed, and I'd heard that if you like get into service, if you help, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but if you stop being like a completely compressed, selfish asshole and reach out to help people other than yourself, sometimes that makes you feel better. And so it was all I had. Like, it was the only, what else would I have to offer y'all? Like, I can't cook or, you know, so I just emailed you saying, hey, I have a podcast. I can help you do a podcast if you wanted to do a podcast.
And this is to nobody. This is info@ramdass.org, which suddenly got to me. And I did not know who Duncan was. Joe Rogan was maybe the only established podcaster at that time. What is this? This is, how many years ago is this? Is 10 years ago? It's almost 10 years ago.
Very long time ago.
Yeah. And so it was not ubiquitous, podcasts as they are now. So it was like not a normal thought that any of us came up with that we should be doing this.
That was when you still had to tell people what a podcast was. If you invited them on the show, a lot of times they would have no idea what it meant. And it was named after a now complete obsolete technology, the iPod. It was like something you listen to on your iPod. But yeah, that was a long time ago.
So I get the email, and I thought, well, you know, I was in the radio business that's how I met Ram Dass. So it's kind of a cool idea. I had a rudimentary understanding. And then I said, well, let's talk. And we did. We had our first conversation in which Duncan explained the whole thing. And then he just said, I don't know, you should just take an excerpt or a talks, you know, podcasts are about an hour long. Of course, Duncan himself does them like 2-3 hours now, so does Joe. And, you know, just kind of intro it yourself. So that way there's a live element to it. And I said, can you help me though? Can you tell me what equipment I need and how do I, blah, blah, blah. What about distribution? How do you do editing? Oh my God. So Duncan said, yeah, sure, no problem. And the next thing was, well, why don't we get together and meet up?
Yeah.
And so Duncan is at the time living in Los Angeles on the north side. Silver Lake? No, not quite. Something. Echo Park, something around there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, close enough, yeah.
Yeah.
And Atwater Village, technically.
Yeah. And I said, okay, well, I'll go over there and meet you. And why don't you tell this part of the story?
Well, I was certain that you were going to be like, I don't know, dressed in some weird spiritual costume. I was really worried that you were going to be, I don't know. I didn't want it to be cheesy or worse. So I don't know, some kind of like cult. You know, I was just imagining, like, my vision of like, all right, it's probably going to be a dude with like, I don't know, some necklace that's too big, maybe lots of rings. I don't know, whatever. Crystals all over his body.
Right, in the third eye, a big crystal. Yeah.
Who knows? You never know. So when you're walking up my steps, like, oh, it's Raghu. I didn't know it's just a normal, cool person. And then, we did a podcast.
Yeah.
And that was when I got to talk to, first time I did, as far as I'm aware, that I'd ever gotten to hang out with a person who'd met Neem Karoli Baba in person. And I remember at the end of the podcast going, like, you left, and I remember looking in the mirror and thinking, oh, how rude that you got this stoned, because I felt so high.
Yeah.
And then I remembered I didn't get high. Like, it was the first time I experienced that weird buzz you get at the retreat, you know, that whatever that thing is.
That thing there. I love that. And meanwhile, I walk in the room and there's a big picture of Maharaji.
I already had one.
He's got, you know, in this room where we're going to, living room, do the podcast. And I thought, oh man, what have we done? What, somebody's indoctrinating him? I mean, I didn't say a word about this. It said, if somebody is coming over to your house to visit you that was in the community of Ram Dass and Neem Karoli Baba, you must have a big picture on the wall next to you, right? This is what I'm thinking, who forced him into this? This is ridiculous.
No forcing. I just liked his picture. was a post-breakup apartment, man. So it's like nice to have him beaming down at you. From, you know, it was really,
So the beauty, though, in all of this is that before my eyes, and we became good friends, which we are to this day. And before my eyes, though, I saw really a transformational thing happened in you over a long period of time. And I don't think I've ever quite, because we spent a lot of time together in one way or another, I never quite experienced that with somebody else, that I saw what was happening, you know, over this time. And the way that it was integrating was really unusual. And by the way, the way that you gravitated towards Buddhist mindfulness and meditation in the midst of all the, you know, the gaudy Hindu shit, it's the way it happened for us. So for me to see that happening again, you know, is like incredible. It was incredible. Because it substantiated that legacy, you know, that is a strong part of the legacy, is that kind of combination, you know, with, well, we're doing it at this retreat in Boone, which you'll be part of, which is the intersection of Buddhism and bhakti. The intersection, we called it love and reason, discriminating wisdom alongside of the opening of the heart. So I saw that in you over this span of time. It was like a case study. That's really
so interesting. That's so wild. And much of it was very spontaneous. And, you know, and I see how the two go hand in hand. It's you could see how it just makes perfect sense that you would want to have some kind of ability to stabilize, to know your mind, to get familiar with the mind, so that you could understand when you're not up in your head, you know, and sometimes just through that meditation practice. I don't know if you ever had that experience of just all of a sudden you're sitting and I can remember the first time it happened. It's just the most intense, sweet sadness. I don't know. You know, just this incredible, powerful first time it happened. It was so wonderful, but so sad. Not bad sad, good sad. But I remember talking to David, like, what is that? And he's like, oh, that you radiate. That's the place that it radiates out from. I think what he meant was, you know, that's maybe bodhicitta, as they call it, or that's the
enlightened
heart, the heart of compassion, you know. But you know, it's not like you can force that or something. Just somehow over the course of sitting, it just seems to happen.
Where's the sad? To me, the sad, I can't relate quite with what you're saying about the sadness. Maybe just
the sadness.
Yeah. Talk about that. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you've managed to really clamber up in your head, like I had managed to do, so that you're pretty much not operating from the neck down, then I think sometimes a lot of the heart, like the feeling of what the heart is, get the first way you might translate that feeling is, this is sadness. It's probably not sadness. You know, that might not even be the right word for the emotion, or maybe it's not nuanced enough or something like that. But if you've been evading your heart, probably part of the reason you've been doing that is because you associate it with sadness. You associate it with getting your feelings hurt, or you associate it with vulnerability. Mm. And if suddenly it just decides to open for a second, it gives you a glimpse, then you're like, oh, that's the thing I got really good at not connecting to.
You know, here's another interpretation or definition that makes sense to me and has happened to me. Once that thing opened up, as you're suggesting, the heart opens up, whatever silly analogies you want to make. Once that happens, then there's a place, wow. It's like you went in and you had a Häagen-Dazs for the first time. This is what happened to me with named Karoli Baba. And then that's the best thing you ever had. My God.
Yeah.
And then you go off and you walk around the block, you're doing whatever, and you start to miss it. So, and then it takes a seat in your being, this, what you call sadness, what I call longing.
Yeah.
To connect back with it.
Yeah.
Like it's not, that is a principal part of the devotional path, actually. And it's, for me, I love Indian music. I love music in general. But what I most love is and I found out about this later, actually, my teacher and all of this was Jai Utal, who really knew the Indian system and could sing and play Indian instruments. And there are certain ragas that absolutely have the ingredient of the desire to merge and become one with.
Yeah.
That longing, you know. One of them, to me, like, if I hear this, it's just, I go like that. It's called Bhairavi. Yeah, everybody out there and whoever's doing show notes, wherever the hell this talk appears,
yeah.
Bhairavi. Anyhow, so that may be another way of saying what you're saying.
Sadness, whatever you want to call it, longing. You know, it's just, it's interesting, this thing, because it's like, what an experience to, what an experience to suddenly you're longing for something that isn't, not the usual stuff you.
Yeah,
you
right. Long. It's not physically manifested right in front of you. Here, there is that Häagen-Dazs.
That's a wild feeling. That's an incredible feeling. And you know, if you're primitive like me, you go sadness. Yeah. You don't go longing for the transcendent. You're more like, I don't think I'll meditate anymore. I don't know what that is, but what?
Yeah, exactly.
But it gets better.
Yeah. So just to finish our little introduction to everybody out there who didn't know the antecedents of Be Here Now Network. Of course, this is all about Ram Dass.
Yes.
Be Here Now. The other thing that happened that I must honor you about is, so Duncan started coming then to the retreats in Maui, and you can listen to a couple of the podcasts that we did, either on Mind Rolling or on Duncan Trussell Family Hour, that describe, you know, it was at a very crucial point in your life with your mother's passing. Basically.
Yeah.
And you went with me and we went over to Ram Dass's house. So it's a great story, but more of what happened, what I'm trying to say is Duncan started coming to the retreats, and Duncan can do nothing but talk about everything in his life. And this was part of it.
Yeah.
And then other people from the Family Hour listenership started coming to the retreats. And a lot more of next generation, right, who follows Duncan, who has been for many years. And suddenly, after Ram Dass says to me, when I say, what are you looking to in the future? What should we be doing to fulfill the mission of the foundation? And what you want? And he said, reach out to the next generation and make this, all of these teachings available to them in whatever way they want it. And of course, the podcast. So the first thing was the podcast network. And then the next thing was Duncan's joining us And then Duncan and I did various, at every one of these things. If we first, we started out talking to Ram Dass. There is some hilarious stuff with our chats with Ram Dass. And then we started doing stuff, just he and I, doing sort of a live podcast. And the way that it was part of a big change that happened, and the profoundness of Ram Dass's desire for this to be made available to next generation, and the way that that got fulfilled, it's like, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, give me a breath. I love the story. Okay. But I mean, you would have done a podcast network. It was a matter of, I just got lucky because I'm the first person. It's like, I'm sure when electric light bulbs came out, somebody was like, you introduced me to electric light bulbs. Thank you. You would have, but you know, I will take it where I could get it. Thank you so much. I mean, those retreats have really been one of the greatest things in my life. And you know, your association and the association with the Satsang, of course, has really helped, at least slightly sand down some of my rough edges. Pretty great.
Oh, Ram, 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 Ram. Well, since this is Ram Dass's network, and it's amazing how alive he is through these teachings and through all the media that we have. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. When I went in, it's a little bit personal, but I'll share it. When I went back after he died, I was in the house and in his room, and it was all, you know, powerful. The vibrations were still there. And I went, what was it? So that was 2020. And then we had the retreat that you couldn't do. Sorry about that. In 2021. So a couple of years later. And I went up and I sat in his room where they still had where he was laid out and the flowers and all that stuff. Mm. His room was exactly as it was. And I just sat and meditated. And I don't have visionary stuff go on. Let me tell you, that's not part of my makeup. So, but I did, suddenly I saw there was Maharaji in my mind's eye. This wasn't a darshan thing, but it was in my mind's eye. There was Maharaji. And then I look over, there's Ram Dass next to him. Wow. And I had this thought, oh, wow, you just wanted to stay there. Good idea.
Yeah, exactly. I think people got that feel. He was sticking around longer for us. He's in that, you know, a body there. So I think a lot of physical pain he was enduring. And remember that last mala ceremony?
Yeah.
Remember that?
It's on film. We have a beautiful film of it. That shows, actually, because Ram Dass is, the first time we could have the memorial at the Hanuman temple in Taos is only at Guru Purnima this July, this month, just turned July. So so I took a look at that film again because they asked what could we show just to get everybody. Yeah. Yeah, and it is incredible.
Incredible.
It's both him at the temple coming in, and he just, I was in the temple. I'd never been in it before. I came after he was somewhere else. He had already been there. And then he was wheeled in his wheelchair, and he went right in front of Hanuman, and I was just off to the right. And then he just broke down crying, and I did. I mean, it was just such a huge emotional thing for him. He had gotten that murti installed, you know, whatever, 35, 40 years previously. And then there it was, housed finally in something just extraordinarily beautiful. You guys got to come out. You're not that far now. You can come out. You can drive out there.
Not that far.
Yeah. So, but Ram Dass, everybody out there probably know, mostly through me, I'm sure it's because I talk about it all the time. I'm like fixated on the movie of me and transcending it. And Duncan and I have been working on an audio book from the movie of me to the movie of us.
Yes.
And I just happened to be looking through some notes of things I did with Ram Dass and from his talks. So I'm going to quote something, okay?
Okay.
This is from Ram Dass. We got so busy being individuals. It's all about, what do I need? What do I want? That we threw out our web of connection to extended family and community. We threw it over in our zeal to be individuals. Does this not ring big bells in individuals in this country and what's going on? And we ended up dealing with a tremendous amount of pathology around alienation. To me, this so describes what's happening now and a major issue that is very worthwhile to uncover.
Yeah. Alienation. Yeah. That's a perfect analysis, I think, of a problem. I think maybe if there is anything good about being like incredibly selfish for the majority of your life is that when you start experimenting with like not doing that, for me, that's, you know, I have kids and, cooking for them or watching them eat food that I've cooked for them or, you know, just putting them in front of me or putting the family in front of me. And anytime that happens, personally, subjectively, I have peak experiences. I have the experience that I was going for via like the opposite route, which is like, what's the best mixture of drugs and sex and location? And if you had just the right place, you might get an inkling of this feeling. And then, you know what I'm saying? Suddenly you realize, oh, wow, I see the mistake. It was obvious. It was, in fact, it's like so obvious that it's embarrassing almost. But we know when you do realize that the cliche, the stuff that might as well be written on cereal boxes, is true.
Yeah, that's the horror. Actually,
it's not like it's a secret. It's not like it isn't the thing that like Cocomelon, the cartoon my kids watch. It's not like it's not from the very beginning being put out there. But when you really do start doing those experiments in it, it's the greatest. It's a real relief to realize that you don't really need to. This isn't a supernatural phenomena. That the bliss, the joy, the sense of connection, the feeling of coming home, the feeling of hope or possibility outside of whatever your karmic patterns are, to get there, it's not complex. It's the least complex thing ever, which is why one of the stories of Neem Karoli Baba I always think about, which is you would say, feed people.
Uh-huh. Well, feed people. How do I raise Kundalini? Feed people. Ram Dass got pissed at that. I need a secret Buddhist teaching here. All my friends are getting these secret teachings and they're going into these incredible states. So if I can't, well then how do I get enlightened? There must be a love everyone.
Yeah.
And Ram Dass just fell apart at that point because it was too simple.
Yeah.
It's just too simple for us.
Yeah, that's it. Simple. Infuriatingly simple.
Yeah.
But thank God it's simple. What a disaster if it wasn't. What a disaster if it required something more than that. And, what a disaster. If you did have to go to some high peak or down into the center of the earth or find the secret city of Shambhala or some ancient scroll or something.
On the other hand, we got plenty of problems. The stuff that you and I have been talking about, that Krishnadas's brilliant idea of the movie of me, you're the chief protagonist, writer, director, producer, all the bit parts, 24/7. And Duncan and I talked at one time in one of these shows that we did and talking about, well, why are we doing this? You know, we all know that we just came up. As soon as you get a name, you get individualized. Is that a word?
Yeah, individuated.
Individuated. Good. You took more English at school than I did. And in that individuation, separation seems so natural.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
So we all know this stuff, and it's like, oh, okay. On the other hand, I said to you, I remember saying to you, I'm just sick and tired of it. This is decades. I've done a lot of spiritual work, you know, and as conscious as I could have practiced all of what we're talking about, I did. And yet sometimes much more than vestiges, like before this podcast, I don't know why. I just went to get a drink of water. And, you know, there's the filtered water system. And I opened it up. It's gushing water and it won't stop even when I turn the tap off. I go, wait, you can't do this to me. I got a pot. What the? And, you know, I did that and I went, oh, Jesus. God help me. It's still there. It's very difficult that there's still this, there's no spaciousness in that moment. There's a reaction. There's the jumping into it. You get a host of other things that Sharon Salzberg calls piling on. It's a football term. I don't know how she got it. But yeah, throw the whole kitchen sink at this huge disappointment, you know. And so it was like enough. And I thought, well, if you and I talked about it enough, maybe we'd get it out of our system a little bit.
No, maybe a little. Maybe a little. I mean, I as I told you, I did this. I just did a podcast with Sri Sri Gurudev Ravi Shankar. And he, wow, what a wow. But he, you know, one of the things he was saying is, he was quoting Jesus, saying that where Jesus was saying you should become like a child to enter the kingdom of heaven, and pointing out, like, you know, children, which I'm neck deep in right now, you know, they will burst into a rage, you know, they will get angry or sad or devastated, fall to the ground completely defeated by life because you're not giving them a graham cracker, you know. It's like the pictures they put on the newspaper when the stock market's crashing, and the people at the stock market, the same level of despair.
Yeah, the guy in the exchange where his necktie is like pulled down to his belly and his shirt's disheveled, his hair's all over the place. And he's like, oh my God.
But then, I mean, this is the point he was making. Within a few moments, they're laughing. They're not remembering.
The kids, not the guy, the stockbroker.
That's the difference. No, see, that's the difference. That's the difference.
Yeah, right there.
You know, and you know, it's that human tendency to cling to the suffering, to remember forever. Yeah, that's the guy who didn't give me the graham cracker when I wanted it. You know what I mean? they don't remember that. And so, or if they do that, it's gone. They're so in the moment. And I think that's why Jesus used them as this example, because I think the heart must be the kingdom of heaven. That must be what he was talking about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's so great. Yeah. Well, lest you be a child, you shall not know the kingdom. Now, another thing is related to Duncan and the work that he has done. And of course, I think many of you are familiar with that great Netflix show, Midnight Hour?
Gospel.
Midnight Hour. Midnight Gospel, which, what's wrong with you people at Netflix?
Give them a break. God. Damn. No one, like, that's the thing. When I said it got canceled, everyone got so mean to Netflix, and it's like,
they're so mean, like,
giving me a show.
2.5 million people quit Netflix after they heard that.
I don't want that to happen. Like, they gave me a show. We walked in with like the weirdest idea ever, and they did it. So I'll love them forever for it. You know, I don't, you know, who so knows?
Like, what a great thing.
You can't help it. The algorithm rejected the Midnight Gospel, or who knows whatever the reasons are. But
No.
They let it come into being.
So one central core connectivity, really, between Duncan and Ram Dass is humor. And I had to, you know, something we actually haven't talked about, and it's a large part of the antidote to the movie of me is humor, that we're not taking ourselves so seriously, et cetera, et cetera. And in the movie Becoming Nobody, the director, Jamie, said to Ram Dass, what are the two pieces of advice you would give to somebody on the path? What would they be? And he went, love and humor. Okay? Isn't it?
That's cool.
here's what he said in, we have this great book, Ram Dass, Words of Wisdom book theme. Oh, God. I'm sorry. This is Ram Dass. Humor puts things in perspective. To me, that says it all right there. There are many levels of humor. The humor of survival, the humor of sex and gratification, the humor in connected with power.
That's cool.
Beyond all these, there's a humor that's filled with compassion. It is reflected in the tiny upturn in the Buddha's mouth. For he sees the humor in the universal predicament. All beings are lost in illusion. Yet he knows that they will awaken from that illusion, for they are, at heart, already enlightened. He knows that what seems so hard for them is, from another perspective, their path to liberation.
Wow,
that's a great quote, huh?
Yeah, that is cool.
Ram Dass is good at that.
Not the funniest quote I've ever heard in my life, but definitely.
No, it wasn't meant to be funny. It was meant to just point to the reality. And, you know, and my query to you is, who have been doing a hell of a lot of stand-up lately.
Yeah.
By the way, go to Duncan Trussell Family Hour and see his schedule. He's all over the country, okay? And catch up with him and tell him Raghu sent me. So what is it for you on both the temporal, meaning worldly? This is part of your work, and you know you're focusing on being able to have people erupt really into a place that they lose their mind, because they're not thinking. It's just like they're stirred into this wonderful, pleasing condition. And then there's the reality of it from what Ram Dass is talking here, which is perspective, that puts you in a perspective that really can help change your life.
What's the question?
I can't remember all that. The question is, how does it work for you when you're working versus when it works as a spiritual perspective?
Well, I mean, I think what Ram Dass is talking about is... maybe that's a place where you might think like it might produce some great jokes or something like that. But what Ram Dass is talking about, I'm trying to get you this here. I'm going to send you this real quick. Look at this.
What?
This is one of my favorite paintings. It's a Christian painting.
Huh?
It's called Christ in the Desert. And this, you know, my interpretation of this thing, I'm going to send it to you right now, so that you can look at it. Maybe we could talk about it. Because when you look at it for the first time, it doesn't seem very funny.
Don't I have to give you sharing privilege, I think?
No, I just sent it to you. Just put that link in your
browser. You emailed it.
Look at
it. Okay. Well,
or give me sharing privileges.
Huh?
Can you give me sharing privileges?
Yeah. I can give you sharing privileges.
Please.
Yeah. One. I'm going to make you the host.
All right.
Now you have the power. Okay. This is crazy. You guys can see this on YouTube, by the way. Those of you who are listening to this, you can take a look at it. Wow. It looks like an image of Christ meditating on a rock, right?
Yeah, right. But, you know, if you look at it for a second, even though, like, you know, obviously he's exhausted. This is after the temptation. This is like when he goes to the desert, Mara, it's Buddha's enlightenment. This is the Christian Buddha's enlightenment. But this is the great realization, I think, of what's ahead of him. And obviously that wasn't like something you would definitely, you would be that excited about. But if you look at this enough, you will see in the most subtle way, that smile that Ram Dass is talking about, the recognition of the absurdity of doing anything to try to ease the suffering of the planet, but most importantly, the absurdity of like the fact that any human being has that potential. That's how I interpret that. And within that is where the smile starts happening, because it's the coolest thing ever. How could you not smile? Even though your body, you have this body, you're in the desert spiritually, literally, the world, this dry, dead, rotten, terrifying place. Once you hear that thing you were talking about, the Haagen-Dazs thing in your heart, you know what I mean? There's a part of you
that Haagen-Dazs in your heart.
That's the part where you realize, oh yeah, everything's going to be fine. Even here in the desert, where nothing should be alive, or no, I shouldn't be. That's my interpretation. That's the cosmic giggle, the big smile, whatever you want to call it. But it's not a fake bullshit spiritual smile. It's not a smile that is ignorant of the reality of all the suffering in the world, and is not a smile that's trying to hide that from itself or from anybody else. I think that's where the comedy part comes in. That's where the jokes come from.
Okay, you got to stop screen sharing, though.
Not being afraid to acknowledge those aspects of the world. I don't know how to stop screen sharing. Stop share.
There we go.
Yeah.
So this is like we're in the moment here, everybody. Just not planning anything. I think the biggest thing that I have as a takeaway from humor that really does open up a space so that you're not jumping down your throat is taking the self, I said this before, but taking the self-seriousness out of the equation. Like this faucet is leaking and water's going everywhere and I can't find the shut off and I got a podcast, and then there's a little smile that happens in the corner of the screen, which is a bunch of clouds, but there's one corner that's just, this is the, you know, analogy for emptiness. There's a little part of the screen or the picture that is blue, and the clouds actually will move further away so that that takes over more of the screen, of the picture, of your perspective, so that you calmly go and you find the shut-off valve and you leave everything. This is what just happened to me, so that you can have a conversation with your friend at the podcast. So that perspective of just taking out like self-seriousness, this is clinging, you can't see below
my waist here, but I'm actually naked from the waist down, sitting on my GIMP. You know, to me, that's the comedy of the situation. Is like anytime we have a conversation, I have somebody who is our GIMP, a leather clad, beautiful person that I like to sit on when I'm talking to my spiritual friends.
Okay, that's an awful image, though. Why? I have to get that out of my head.
Don't be sex negative, Raghu.
Oh, God.
He loves it.
oh boy. All right.
Got here's your water joke. I've got my GIMP.
Yeah, right. All right. This talking about us and them is Ram Dass. I don't know. He talked about that so much from the first days that he gave talks after he first came back from India. It's just extraordinary. The cultivation of compassion means that you also appreciate what the mainstream, this is today. He could have said this yesterday. The cultivation of compassion means that you also appreciate what the mainstream consciousness is about and why those people are the way they are. And instead of making them into quote unquote them,
yeah,
that they're part of quote unquote us. This is our whole audio book core thing. And I think that that's part of what compassion is. It's to realize there's no them. This is just all of our body parts, which play in the systems that are interdependent. And I feel very much part of a system in which any one of these politicians that we see on television is a part. I'm loosely quoting now.
Yeah.
It's just the question of where us keeps moving. As long as I don't define it into a polarization, there's a real chance the whole organism can move together.
Yeah.
Is that, that says it all.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, Cornfield's book, I think it's called Bringing the Dharma Home. You know that book? It's really good. Mm-hmm. Great audio book. I've been listening to it. But he, in line with that, he was talking about how, I don't know, there was someone who was studying apes and people couldn't get close to them. It's like it's not Jane Goodall. I can't remember the name of the researcher. But, you know, the gorillas would freak out when humans came around, become very defensive and seem quite scary. This researcher, the only difference between him and the other researchers who'd freak the gorillas out is that he went in there without a gun. He didn't have a weapon. And because he didn't have a weapon, they didn't, you know, they understand guns. They were like allowing him in. So the tribalization, the polarization, you're wrong, I'm right, whatever. I'm on the left, you're on the right. I'm on the right, you're on the left. I'm a liberal, you're a conservative, so we can't be friends, or whatever the thing, the philosophical weapon that you bring in to your encounters with people that you consider to be the other can only make them defensive. It can only make them do the same thing to you. Yeah, so I think what Ram Dass is talking about there is, can you hang out with these, you know, idiots, these drooling, backwards, aggressive, rotten, misogynistic, right-stealing, anti-human, anti-abortion, anti-women's rights, anti-seemingly most things on earth, that just like people have been huffing some kind of fascist glue, each one a mini Mussolini, someone who it would be better if we rounded them all up and put them into I don't know, jails, re-educated them, or sent them into the Musk's Martian colonies. Can you be around these? I'm just kidding. They're not like that. I don't know why. I was just trying to do a tirade of joking. That's what they think of us too. These people are just us. You, Raghu, I probably might hate to hear this. You, if you'd had the right set of conditions in your life, you'd be driving around proudly flying a Trump flag right now in the back of your big truck, not listening to kirtans at all, listening to some kind of like, you know, pop country music, Miller Lite and a cozy while you drive around thinking about rodeos. That could happen to you if you'd had the right set of circumstances. So I don't think we like to realize that, because if you realize that, then the enmity, all the fun of being aggressive, all the fun of creating a scapegoat, all the fun of imagining there is a singular enemy in the world, that, because if you think there's a singular enemy embodied in some group of people, then there's hope. Destroy or get rid of that group of people, world peace will follow. Then, you know what I mean? You got to give all that up. You have to give it all up.
Yes, I know, but I'm having a hard time. Now, particularly the most recent thing, and, you know, and this is me completely in polarization, by the way, And that's, again, humor is good because you realize, oh, isn't that fun? Okay, you want to play that for a while as long as you're not putting your complete belief system into it. Okay, go ahead and play with it a little bit. And that's, I mean, they cut off the ability of controlling and diminishing coal burning. Okay, the Supreme Court cut that off. Cut the EPA off. So maybe everybody would say, well, you know, these people can't possibly do the right thing because it's political.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, at the, you know, beck and call of whoever's in power and so on and so forth. But how could they even think of doing something like that without any kind of idea of what the right thing? This is wrong thinking written large.
Yeah.
We are all in this boat. If there's one thing that we should be able to completely connect with, it's about our environment and what we are doing and what we have been doing for so long since the Industrial Revolution. And isn't that a way for us to come together? And, you know, we are so far apart. We are so polarized.
That's the thing. I don't think we are polarized. I think the polarization is an illusion. Whenever I get around, I'm in Texas now and I'm in Austin. So I'm in this great place where there's like hyper conservative, super right wing people and super left leaning people. Man, whenever I get around the super conservative people, they're the sweetest people you've ever met in your life. They would do any, I'm not being hyperbolic at all. They are the least mean, least aggressive people. I've they're very generous. They'll help you. They'll help you without, they just want to help. So it's like, this is the problem is when you're not in, when you've tribalized and you've gone off in your own little quadrant of whatever it may be with people who agree with you and you're not crossing paths with them, then you start imagining things about them that just aren't true. Mm. They're not like that at all. They love kids. They want big families. They love Jesus. You know what I mean? They will invite you into their house and cook for you. And if you needed help with anything, they would do that. And when they're thinking about people like us, you know, they think we're like snorting cocaine, getting adrenochrome injected into our arms. You know what I mean? They think that we're, you know, worshiping owl gods or something because they haven't been around us. And that's our fault.
Owl gods?
Moloch, you know, a lot of them think like,
oh, right.
That there's a secret early. The point is,
monkey gods, maybe, but
you do worship a monkey god.
No, it's,
but you're not doing cocaine or adrenaline. The point is, you get around and you would do anything for anybody. And that's the truth. And you get around, we need to mix together more because you start mixing together with people who have vastly different belief systems than you do, vastly different politics than you do. And you mix with them, not because you want to teach them a lesson, not because you're like, I'm going to descend here down into the peanut gallery and try to heal the world or some gross stuff like that. Put down your gun. Put down whatever it is you're using to define them or whatever form you're trying to force them into and just spend a little time with them. Listen to what they're saying. A lot of them are like really wonderful, wonderful people. I'm not saying they all are, obviously, but the ones I've encountered, I can't believe how nice they are. I can't believe how welcoming and sweet they are and also how polite they are. They're not trying to dig into your politics. You know what I mean? They're just
this
cool.
This is like, God, I every time you go to this place, this beautiful place, heart-centered and connective, it's really lovely. But then I do remember the first podcast that we did,
Molotov
Cocktails podcast.
Yeah, this is your fault. You did
see, this is the complete evolution of a man, Duncan Trussell.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I talked to Gurudev Ravi Shankar, and he's saying, you know, this, it's just not going to work. We can't but you can't tribalize like this. We can't be so into this is right and that's wrong. And this, because in that you forget the thing that I think he didn't say this, but I mean, I translated it into, you know, what do they call it? The Dharma, the Sanatana Dharma, the eternal, eternal way, family, eating together, singing together, walking together, working together. Within that, when you forget all the worldly stuff, it doesn't matter who you're hanging out with. Within that, you know, the sun starts rising. You experience the like reality of our shared humanity, which is so much older than Republicans or Democrats or liberals or conservatives. It's so much older than any of that. And that's what we really are, right? That must be what we really are. So, you know, again, not saying that there should not be an activist or an attitude of like trying to, you know,
get social justice and everything else, environmental.
Look at Joan Halifax, a perfect example of the synergy between those two possibilities. You know, it is possible, but the other thing Ram Dass is famously, like one of his famous, I think he was giving a lecture, he probably told this story more than once, is you go to a peace rally and people are holding signs that say peace, going, peace, peace, you know, it's like, that's not peace, you know? And so I think when you run into people like Roshi Joan Halifax or Gurudev Ravi Shankar, Ram Dass or any of these people, you realize that they are not passive. They are in the world trying to help, but the energy behind that helping is not aggression. It's love. It's compassion. Yeah. And it's somehow tireless. I think the reason it's tireless or that they have all that energy is because it just is exhausting to be angry all the time.
Mm-hmm. And let's just transport that concept to our inner workings, each one of us. And that's what I said about why are we doing this audiobook, the movie of me to the movie of us? Because I said, I'm exhausted from this inner polarization. I mean, I do pretty well. I've got, you know, my sense of humor's intact.
Yeah.
I have enough mindfulness and understanding of my neurotic tendencies through our show. It's been our therapy.
Yeah.
Which is what I thought it would be. And at the same time, there is no way that this just happens because you want it to, you know. Ram Dass is just a last little quote from Ram Dass before we leave. He said, what we need to do is become an environment where other people can come up for air.
Oh, wow.
That says it all. And the thing is, that takes practice.
Yep.
You know, and Duncan got sick. We were talking maybe, I don't know, a month or two ago. And he was telling me, I'm just sick of this attempted discipline and daily meditation and contemplation. And I got a family here, okay? I got to get out there and earn some money. I got small children. And, you know, sometimes you just let go of everything, right? He said something like that.
Yeah.
And then what did I say? I said, I don't know. There's not two things. There's only one thing. And from that one thing, whatever needs to happen, you trust in intuition, which is my favorite practice, is working on trusting the intuition that's inside of us to lead us into complete unification with what your dharma is. And you just let go into that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just, it's the way in which the integration of the me and the we is starts inside ourselves, starts with stop talking shit to yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was put into a, you know, if everything was recorded and put into a little book of how you talk to yourself and you published it, you'd be a pariah for being so nasty and mean.
Right.
Just mean-spirited, you know?
Yeah.
And so just starting there, you know, just the most simple starting points of just integrating humor, awareness, mindfulness, and stop killing ourselves. You know, stop that killing. It's got to stop now.
Stop the war.
Yeah. And then the war outside ourselves, which is all of the issues we've been talking about, from political polarization, social polarization, what we're dealing with as a people in on a globe right now. Nothing can happen until that inner polarization is breached.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I caught myself looking at myself in the mirror the other day and before, like, unconsciously looking at myself going, "You fat fuck." You know what I mean? Just like it popped out right away. "You fat fuck. Who is that?" And I don't want that to be my last words. I mean, you know what I mean? What happens if I keel over? What happens if that's just like, whatever, my heart stops right after I said that to myself? So I think, like, yeah, being aware of that, whatever that is. And then weirdly, you can't then say to the thing that called itself a fat fuck, "What the fuck's wrong with you? Why'd you call me a fat fuck?" Because now you're three things in a fight with each other. So, but ultimately, you know, I do hear what you're saying. It's got to start with the internal aggression against oneself. As our Lord Jesus said, a house divided upon itself cannot stand.
Very good, Rabbi. Rabbi, here's the last thing, because I can't get this out of my head for the last, I don't know, many months that I found in the Ram Dass Words of Wisdom book. "I myself stand in need of the arms of my own kindness."
Wow.
I mean, that's everybody, cool. Just take that on and go, okay, this is, just start there.
Start there
by sitting quietly for a few minutes and just doing that practice, you know, so. There you go. Thank you for being here.
Anytime, Raghu. I love these conversations. Anytime. Thank you for being here, Raghu.
And thank you for really being part of how this network came to be. And, you know, 6th anniversary is not nothing.
Not nothing.
And many more anniversaries I hope we get to. We're celebrating in at the same time, any kind of support that we can get from people, we appreciate, for Love Server Member Foundation, Be Here Now Network, and everything else that we're doing. So I will, I'll see you next time.
See you next time,
my friend.
Love, love. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.